Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I am joined by Nikunj Doshi, a Salesforce certified technical architect working for Deloitte in Sydney. Through the episode, we hear more about Nikunj's early life and career and what he was really interested in. We then discuss his role in business development, finding the Salesforce platform, and learning to code with Infosys through one of their intensive training programs. Nikunj shares how he took to Salesforce development and how he excelled as a developer by investing many, many hours into this role. We discuss learning to design solutions and when Nikunj felt he was ready to be an architect. Nikunj then runs us through his CTA journey and shares some insight into his two review board attempts and how they differed. He also talks about how he found out he had passed, what that felt like, and what a relief it was for both him and his family. Finally, we talk about the role of a Salesforce developer and why there really is no excuse for bad quality code. Plus, Nikunj shares tips for anyone wanting to be a CTA. I really hope you enjoy the episode, and if you do, please subscribe for future episodes that are coming through.
So Nikunj, thank you so much for joining us. I'm excited to hear more about your story and kind of what's led you to this path and where you're at today. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben, for inviting me.
Thank you. Honour is all ours. So I always like to kind of look backwards first and get a picture of your background and life before Salesforce. But what did you actually want to be? What did you want to do when you were growing up?
Well, I have a very interesting past. I have evolved throughout the journey. So earlier in my childhood, I used to be a child actor. I used to work in Bollywood movies and serials and television advertisements. I did that for 8 years. Started doing that as an eight-year-old, and that triggered my journey. And that's where I got some taste of success and heaps of taste of failure. Because, yeah, I was rejected so many times. But, yeah, soon realized that that wasn't something that interested. Like, it gave me happiness for many years. But, yeah, then soon realized that I wanted to do more. So I switched back to studying, and I did my electronics and telecom engineering. But I had no clarity in terms of what I wanted to do or what I wanted to become. But yeah, sooner I started doing a few things. I had a small little startups during my college. I used to run an entrepreneurship cell. Then I started moving down the path of activism. There used to be a big campaign in India during that time called as India Against Corruption. I used to be the logistics manager for the whole of Maharashtra, Mumbai, handling that city. I was all across the newspaper giving interviews. So that was as a college going student, it was quite interesting. Then, yeah, so I put my feet into multiple different things. But then soon realized that there was a common theme that I wanted to do something that was just more than myself. And I wanted to do something where I have an avenue of giving back to the society at some point. So, yeah. But yeah, there was no specific thing. It was just too many things that I wanted to be.
Sure. So then after studying, what did the early days of your career look like? If you kind of didn't know what you wanted to do, what did you fall into after studying?
So it was more of a hard thing where I, like back in India, you get hired by like some giant company, like Infosys will come into your campus and will hire in bulk. And so I was lucky to get placed in Infosys along with 100 others from my college itself. However, unfortunately, the joining of that company got delayed by a year. And I was a young, restless soul who wanted to go and change the world. And yeah, I wanted to do something, so I could not just wait for them forever. So I started hunting jobs. And given I had that entrepreneurship kind of an experience of doing something of my own, I looked out for sales opportunity, business development opportunity. And that was my introduction to the world, the corporate world, as well as to Salesforce. I was selling information security products back then. So I was always surrounded by a world of hackers, like ethical hackers, used to go to conferences with them, used to sell them, pitch them. So yeah, but I was using Salesforce back then to take care of my leads and opportunities. And that is where I saw the power of this particular tool. Never realized that I would end up being in a Salesforce ecosystem and this deep in the Salesforce ecosystem then, but yeah. But I enjoyed my role as a business development guy. And I was doing quite well, to be honest, as a salesperson.
Why did you not stick with that? Why did you decide to go back into the Infosys program?
Yeah, I had that dilemma, and I was thinking, I almost gave up on Infosys and my IT career. But that's when my dad pushed me to just go and try it out and see that that scale. Because I was working for startups, essentially. Now they are not startups. Now they are 400, 500 employees company. Now they have grown, the companies that I used to work as sales. So they have grown now. But at that time, there were startups. But my dad wanted me to just go and experience the corporate world and then experience the scale. And in hindsight, I'm lucky that I took that opportunity to go to Infosys. That has helped me to be where I am right now today.
Sure. I remember I've been at a user group and we were on the train going home together and you showed me the campus, the Infosys campus. And I was literally blown away that the size of this thing and the amount of people that go through this. It's like a university for technology people, right?
Yeah, it's more than a university. It's kind of a Hogwarts kind of an experience that you get. your journey there starts with a sorting hat kept on your head and you get distributed in different technology and languages. And I got sorted in joining the object-oriented programming language, Java, back then. But yeah, it's kind of that, the holistic experiences in terms of you have your hostels, which are more of a five-star hotels with housekeeping services every day that you get. You cycle down to your campuses for lectures and your student halls are like massive. Like if anyone searches for Infosys Mysore campus on Google, they'll understand the excitement that I had gone through then. You have a big multiplex, you have swimming pools, you have like just name any sports and you would have a facility for that. So yeah, and apart from all of that, you have awesome trainers and instructors who take a raw material like me who have zero experience in coding or zero experience in IT and just mold them to be a finished product at the end of the 5 to 6 months residential kind of a training program.
So that's it, 5 to 6 months?
5 to 6 months, but it's intense 5 to 6 months. You have a knowledge check at every touch point and people do actually lose their job part of the training program. It was that rigorous back then. Not sure how it is right now, but I had a few of my friends losing their job. Like, think about it. You failing an exam and you losing your job. That's how connected it was. But yeah, for me, I realized that I enjoy IT coding because that was my first experience. And somehow it was kind of a love at first sight, I would say. I was scoring the highest among the batches of 500, 600 without putting any extra work. It was quite logical to me. It just came naturally to me then.
Did it all come natural, like did all of programming, or was there anything you just couldn't get your head around? There must be something, come on, because there are people out there that are struggling with coding and they're like, this guy can't know everything. He can't have just nailed everything. There must have been something.
True. No, it wasn't. It did not all quite came naturally to me. There was not an inbuilt package that was there installed. However, so I did spend quite a lot of time in the library reading many books. I forgot the name of the book. That is Coding for Dummies kind of a book, Java for Dummies. And that was my first book which taught me Java. So I was a dummy and I understood and accepted where I stood in that world. And I took it from there and just learned the basics and did not give up. That would be the key. Like I continued believing in me regardless of the outcome that I could do this. And I did not just give up. So yeah. But it did not. It wasn't that. It came naturally because I was putting in that much effort.
Sure. Yeah, nice. So then how did you go from having like 5 or 6 months of intensive training to being on a job? Like, were you just dropped into a project as a Java developer at that point?
That's true. So I kind of graduated from Java. So I was put onto, and again, there was again a sorting hat moment at that point where you do not select which city that you would go to. It's randomly you get dropped into a particular city. So I got lucky in terms of I got Pune, which is close to my home city, Mumbai. So I was in Pune on a Java project. And somehow I did not quite connect with the work that was being done. It was very specific problem for a specific client with a specific program, a software that was built. And it was too narrow for me. And I started finding myself kind of a claustrophobic. I was surrounded and I wanted to just get out and do more. So luckily for me, I saw there was another project going on the same floor, which was for Pfizer and which was using Viva, which was built on Salesforce. I did not understand much what they were doing, but I just understood Salesforce and my prior experience with implementing or using Salesforce in my sales role. I was super tempted that this is what I wanted to do. And as a graduate, I just barged into a senior project manager's office and asking him, hey, this is my condition. I've done this thing in the past. I want to do that. Can you help me? And luckily, I got a chance to, my project got changed in my first week from Java project to a Viva project, a Salesforce project.
So it's just for one week you're on a Java project, then you.
That's it.
Nice. So how long did it take you? Because I remember when you came to Australia, the people I would speak to about you, and like you'd really mastered programming as a Salesforce developer, right? Like you'd put in a lot of hours and commitment to do that. But when did you feel like you'd mastered Salesforce development?
I do not feel that I have mastered the Salesforce development till today. It's a continuous learning process. But yeah, I guess during my Infosys days, the job that I was doing was more around data. Data manipulation, your ETLs, and you're pushing data in and out of Salesforce and transforming things. So it was not more of a Salesforce development as such, but I was desperate to move into that world. So I did quite a lot of, there was no concept of Salesforce certification back in that particular floor. I was the first one to go and get a Salesforce developer certification back then. And again, I had to put a business case in terms of why is this certification important? How is it going to add a value to the project? So I did all of that. But that's where, initially I wanted to make a move from what role I was playing to the role that I think I should be playing. I should be more coding. I should be more building. And that's where I spent weekends after weekends just learning and going through the self-study guides of Salesforce. And I used to have 2 or 3 hours of a train journey from Mumbai to Pune every weekend. I used to do up and down. And that's where I used to put Chris Berry, he used to be a Salesforce instructor. His videos were awesome. And that's where I got first taste of Salesforce development. And then I just portrayed myself in the next job that I am a pro advanced Salesforce developer. And using my knowledge, not my experience, I cracked those jobs and got myself landed as a Salesforce developer.
Sure. And how long did it take you? I appreciate, yeah, you're right. You like to master anything, it's ever evolving and you kind of have to stay on top of that. But how long until you'd been, from the moment you started coding with Salesforce to being completely comfortable and really backing yourself as a strong Salesforce developer, how long did that take?
I would say a good 4 or 5 months was the time. However, I was not that confident. By then, I had just written just minimal code in my Infosys project. So I did not have quite the confidence, but I understood the fundamentals and I was confident that I'd do it on the job. And I was able to do it on the job is what I would say. But yeah, again, my if I look at my initial code, they're terrible. Yeah, I was lucky to have technical architects and technical leads reviewing my pieces of code and giving me guidance and not giving up on me. So, and I used to hear their feedback very intently and action on them. So if they give me a feedback once, they don't need to give me the feedback the second time when my code goes for a review. So that is what I made sure, and that's how I learned.
Sure.
Doing my job.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it, like to actually, be a sponge and take on the advice people are giving you. Because if you're getting the same feedback twice and three times, it just shows, a lack of, effort, really.
True.
So from going, being a Salesforce developer to then designing solutions, how long did that take and how did that transition kind of pan out?
That was an interesting, it happened organically. So I used to mention that I am a Salesforce developer, I work for Salesforce, do Salesforce stuff. And the reason of when I initially moved from Java to Salesforce was for one thing. I saw a couple of companies who were just using Salesforce and working for betterment of society. So there was a company named as Vira, which by looking at them, I was very inspired. They were working in Africa and India and solving different interesting social challenges using Salesforce and putting it for good use. So I was always looking for opportunities to use my skills and put it for such use. So I was lucky, a friend of mine approached, we used to run an NGO, asking for, we need something. We are capturing everything on our Excel. And when someone leaves, the knowledge goes with them and things like that. So it was a typical government-run children's home who was struggling. And that's where we got the licenses and I designed the whole solution. So that was the first opportunity for me to not just solve for a specific problem, but look at the holistic problem or holistic pain points and requirements and solve for that. And that triggered my interest in terms of solving for problems on a wider scale, not just for a specific problem. So, and after that, I started looking for more projects, and I used to work with lots with Indian clients, because in my full-time job, I used to work as a developer, taking requirements from Australia or USA and just coding it up and giving it back. So I used to look for Indian clients where I had a straightaway touch point with my customers and used to take the requirements first time. So I did not label myself architect back then, but yeah, I was solutioning and designing stuff.
So is that in your own time you were approaching Indian companies looking for that kind of work just to further develop your skill set and also to give back?
Totally. It was all as a pro bono or for some sum of money, but the focus was to develop my own self, to develop my skills. So that was the core intent and focus.
So at this point, were you just committing kind of as much time as you could to learning and developing?
I used to spend like 12 hours on an average, 6 to 7 days a week doing Salesforce, nothing but just Salesforce.
Did you ever consider that there was something else out there for you, or from that moment, was it all Salesforce for you?
I did not quite consider something else out there. Like I used to do many things outside my work life. I used to volunteer for music festivals. I used to still go and do some activism or some shift form. I used to do all those things which fancied me outside my work. But regarding the work, I felt I was doing good. I was adding value and I was getting acknowledged at that point in time. And yeah, I did not quite try looking for what else for me.
Sure.
I focused on what more can I do rather than what else.
Yeah, okay. So you mentioned you didn't class yourself as an architect at that point. So when did you class yourself as an architect?
That would be when I read some of your job descriptions, I would say. Yeah, this is what an architect role means, that hey, I've been doing this for long enough and I probably have been doing more above and beyond than what has been this role is particularly asking. And then, yeah, okay, this is what they call architects. Yeah, I'm an architect.
So was that more so when you came to Australia? Like, did you, the role that you were performing where you were saying you were taking a requirement from a customer and developing, like, could you have become an architect in that capacity by staying in that role in India, or did you feel that you needed to move and gain exposure in a different environment to be that architect?
True. To be honest, my full-time role back then in the setup that I was working for US clients and Australian clients, and I would have been developer. I was operating as a tech lead, as an offshore tech lead. But for me to make the jump from being a tech lead to an architect, I had to cut down the middlemen in terms of getting the requirements, not processed requirements, but like raw requirements straight from the horse's mouth. And that is where my switch to Australia helped me. My initial role, I was still classified as a senior developer, as a tech lead, playing a similar kind of a role. And that's where I consciously made a move to a smaller partner, where I got exposure to more of that client's requirement and solving problems. Not taking the second hand requirements, but the first hand requirements.
Okay. Sure. How easy did you find the transition when you arrived in Australia into consulting and face to face consulting with a customer in a new country? I know you'd experienced Australian ways of working from delivering from offshore, but actually, like, being a polished consultant in front of a customer, how easy did that come to you?
Yeah, this is where all my previous experiences of my sales or all my entrepreneurship, all my startup adventures, that all played a key role in terms of helping me mold me to be more presentable and things like that. However, it was on the field, observing the best consultants out here doing their job with such an ease and learning from each and everyone. That's how I approached it. It's like I never consider myself as a perfect or that I mastered something. I'm always looking for things to learn. And yeah, so I did, you would remember this, that I used to spend lots of time attending each and every meetup. And I never restricted myself to Salesforce. After coming to Australia, I used to go to big data meetups. I used to go to artificial intelligence meetups. I used to go to some mindfulness meetups. I used to go to different things and I exposed myself to as much as I could. And yeah, that helped me.
Yeah, nice. So tell me about your journey from, you're now an architect, you class yourself as an architect. How did you go from being an architect to then preparing and going through the review board for the CTA?
Yeah, I guess playing a role of an architect on an enterprise scale definitely helps accelerate your journey. So I mentioned somewhere on my on the LinkedIn post that I made about my journey where I used to be a cert hater. Like I never thought that I would be one going behind or getting certification. Like for some reason, like everyone was getting it. I did not see them having that knowledge. So I just lost that motivation. But after coming to Australia, seeing the number of people going behind certs, going gaga about certs, so I thought I'll give it a shot. And that's where I got introduced to this architect journey and those domain specifications. And what interested me the most, that amount of things that I was learning. Yes, definitely I would know 50-60% of the content, but there was that rest 30-50% of the knowledge that I was missing in myself. And I was learning that much. It was not that I was just learning and keeping it myself. I was getting an opportunity to apply it on ground. And that got me started on this architect journey. And I did not consider myself going for CTA. Like it was in 2019 that I made that conscious decision to make a switch to an enterprise partner, like a partner working for enterprise clients, so that I get that exposure. And then that's where I started to soon realize that, yes, this is possible. And that's where my mentor, Paul Fail, comes in. He was the one who spotted me and saw something in me and trusted and believed in me, similar to what Bibu had to share about him. So it requires someone to push you. Like you all have the knowledge, but it requires sometimes you need that push. And Paul was the one who provided me the push. And yeah, after that, I just again, YouTube, meet everyone, grasp from every place possible. And lately, like the study buddies all across the globe, during this attempt, I had study buddies from France and Europe and US. Yeah, and all the distant locations, I might not never meet them again, but I learned a lot from them. So
was that from within Deloitte?
No, not within Deloitte. Within Deloitte, I have a few study buddies, but I expose myself to the wider Salesforce community and try to learn from all the experiences.
Yeah, nice.
This episode of Talent Hub Talk is sponsored by our friends from Flow Republic. Flow Republic is a Salesforce architect academy that works with individuals and businesses to upskill and prepare Salesforce architects for the CTA review board. They also have a number of other offerings, including coaching and guiding on areas such as soft skills, consulting, and design training. Flow Republic are some of the brightest minds in the Salesforce ecosystem and have a proven track record of developing Salesforce professionals and helping architects to reach their goal of becoming a CTA. To find out more about the value they can add, please check out flowrepublic.com.
So what's the review board actually like? Like if you could summarize for us how it feels to go through the review board and I guess what the day is like.
I've been through that day twice. This was my second attempt in which I cleared. This time around, my review board experience was, I had spent enough time, I was confident in my knowledge and in my preparation. And it starts early and it's a really long day with you having 3 hours to prepare. And compared to the last time, the scenario that I had this time was not quite I did not work on a similar projects in the past, so it was quite new to me, and I had to process that 10-11 pages quite quickly. But that's where my preparation came in handy in terms of having all those mind maps and mental models built in and all those experiences of going through the mocks, multiple mocks. And so the preparation went in smooth, and that's where the presentation of 45 minutes come in. And where you are the one speaking and there's no one speaking back to you. It's just that experiences of doing that thing multiple times made me, I can speak in front of a black wall without losing my concentration. So I build that confidence. And again, this being virtual, so there are all those technical glitches that can happen. And just having that positive frame of mind that in the end, all will go well. that helped. And then there is Q&A. Compared to the last time where I struggled with my Q&A, I was acting as a consultant, giving options and pros and cons, but never really recommending. So I had learned from my mistakes in the past, This time I was quite clear, this is what I'm doing, this is how I'm doing, and this is why.
Sure.
And putting a full stop, a period at the end of my statement, so there was no follow-up questions at the end, giving all that they needed. And this time my question answer, to my surprise and shock, it ended 10 minutes prior to the, there were 10 minutes still left on the clock. And after leaving that room, I was like, what just happened? Like 10 minutes, I never heard of this, and it might just mean that I've done terribly, terribly like well. Or extremely bad. Extremely well or terribly bad, something like that. So I was left in a confused state, but I was happy with my preparation because I felt that if I was doing in front of my real client, they would be really happy with what I had produced in that amount of time.
So. Sure. So you mentioned the second time around, you'd never seen a requirement like that before in your day-to-day role. So the first time you had?
That's right. First time I had worked for a similar customer, so I had that advantage. That I had that industry experience. I had that similar solution that I worked in. But again, it was my lack of preparation, I would say. But again, that was my strategy, that I did not want to prepare for months and months. I just wanted like 3-4 months. And I prepared in a very hyperactive mode. I used to spend lots of hours just studying, and giving mocks. And I just went for it. So I came close. I had my own flaws. And I was able to, just after leaving out from the room, I was able to note all the mistakes that I had made at that time. And later when the results came with the feedback, I was able to tally and match them up. So that was a good knowing that I knew what my flaws were. And I was able to correct them the second time around.
Yeah, nice. So when you eventually found out you'd passed the second time, can you remember where you were and how you felt?
Totally. That was one of the most memorable moments of this whole journey. So after my exam, I tried reaching out to Paul, trying to speak about the experience that I had and share with him. I do that quite often. But this time around, he was not able to pick up the call and I left him a text and forget about it. And the next day passed. And just a day after, Paul called me back. And I did not listen to what he was saying. And I already started, hey, this is what happened. I was calling to you about this. This is my exam went and blah, 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 blah. I just started. I did not pause to hear what he's trying to say to me. And then he spoke. Congratulations to Deloitte's newest CTO. And I was like, what? Come back again. I was like, what you just mentioned? So it was unbelievable at that point in time. Time just stopped for a second and then again back to normal, back to reality, back to same old job. But it was quite beautiful.
Yeah. It's amazing because you put so much effort and time and it must be such a draining process because, like you've gone through it once, you didn't get the result you wanted. To go through it again and then the potential of having to go a third time must be quite kind of daunting.
Like a fun fact, my wife had given me a warning this time around. If you don't clear this time, forget about CTA for at least a year.
No pressure. Letting,
that's about it. And I was like, I can't afford this anymore. So, that was the state.
Yeah, wow. So, I can only imagine the relief, but also the excitement. And it's such a big thing, right? And it's something that you've now been working towards for all your career, really, although it might not have been a goal all that time. Like, it's always something you've been aware of, right?
Totally. Looking back, everything connected, and it's a seamless journey in terms of I was growing at each and every stage in my career and learning different things, and that has helped me climb this particular milestone. But again, this the learning continues, and there are many more milestones to be achieved.
Sure. So, one question that comes up a lot is how valuable or how important is a development background for the CTA? And I think people coming from it from different angles have different opinions, right? So if you're not a developer, you'll probably say it's not important. If you are from a development background, you'll probably say it is. So what's your view on how important, how much did you lean on your programming background through the review board to pass?
Totally. So I guess where this distinction is made is when people considered coding and customization and configuration as two different aspects. The way I looked at it, even when I was tagged and labeled as a developer, I was developing, I was creating, I was building. And that didn't matter that I to write a process builder, a flow to achieve a particular thing, versus I writing a trigger to achieve a similar thing. So So I was always developing. And that developer mindset of taking a problem and coming up with a solution, like for a specific solution for that specific problem and developing that out, that helped me immensely in my experience. Because if you ask me that, take this particular requirement and take the solution that you just did, go build it out, I have that confidence in me that I would go and build it out with the topmost quality as possible. And if I did not have my development experience, I would not be able to put forward that solution with the confidence that I am able to put forward. And that's where my belief in my skills and my, again, like admin, coming from an admin background is helpful. It's just one part of the story. There are two pillars to the development. And that's where, like, even if you do not have that in-depth experiences, I work with functional consultants and BAs day in, day out. And that's where I make my best effort in terms of teaching them how to read code, how to speak code. Like, because those skills are very essential. Like, given even that you are not going to write code, doesn't mean you should not be able to speak code and read code and speak to a developer in their language. And that just makes the whole process frictionless and just helps you gain that efficiency. And my development background helps me every single day as my career as an architect, because I consider myself as a hands-on architect. I architect the solution, but I know that the solutions are possible because either I would have done something in the past, or I would have done a POC, or I would have asked the developer to work alongside with him and did a POC proof of concept to validate my assumption and thinking and then build that high level view. So yeah.
Sure. So yeah, nice. When you say it's valuable to be able to read someone's code, how much of that comes down to how good quality the code was in the first place? Because, you know, that like I'm sure there are pieces of code that even you can't read.
Definitely. I guess it comes down to the quality of the developer. So if you have a bad developer, then it just has a terrible impact down the pipeline. So a quality code is a must, and readable code, not by a developer. And that used to be my definition of quality code. If I write something, I would make an admin or a functional consultant read it. If they are able to read it, then I have done my good job as a developer. That used to be my standard.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Again, this is missing thing in what I see. And that's where, as a conscious effort, I make that review. This did not come to me naturally in terms of writing a code that is that readable or that is that clean or simple or, it's like following the concept of do not repeat yourself. And it came because I had good tech leads and architects who were guiding me throughout the journey. And this is what I try to pass it on or give it back and help the developers that I work with raise their standards by doing what they do, just being that awareness. Yeah.
What do you think the reason, and this is, we're digging deep into code here, but it's an interesting one, because why do people write bad quality code then? Is it just laziness? Is it there's a time constraint, or is it that's just their level of skill?
It's just that, to be honest, good code takes less time than the bad code. Because think about it, if you build something bad, you yourself will get lost into that, pigeonholed into that, and then you'll make your life hell. So that, according to me, from my experience, the reason why someone would write bad code is just because he's not been exposed to good code. And what does that good code actually mean? Like, he has not seen it, or someone has not shown him, or he was reluctant in terms of learning, I would just say in general. Like, I know everything. If you go with that attitude, then yeah, you pigeonhole yourself into that particular small bubble.
Sure. Because really, there in this ecosystem, there is no excuse for not learning, because there's so much out there. Like, I've never seen another ecosystem where there's just so much content online, whether that's Trailhead or blogs or YouTube videos or... So yeah, I mean, there really is no excuse for not having seen good quality code now.
Yes, I would totally agree to that fact. And that's where those in the senior tech leads or senior developers have a responsibility of being strict. I remember my code being rejected twice and thrice and four times because of small, silly things. Like, it would start, like, my initial experiences where I used to get, like, let's say 15 review comments. It will come down to 10. It will come down to 3. And then it will come down to some one thing. Even for that one thing, it used to be rejected. But that kind of an environment I do not see lately, where there is the focus on let's ship it out. Okay, it works on the surface, let's ship it out. So that's where like a governance is required to and that's where your team's maturity and that governance aspect come into play.
Sure. So I've got two final questions then. This one just came to mind. For someone starting their developer journey, what would be the best piece of advice you could give them for them to go on to be the best developer that they can be?
As you just said, there's so much out there. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. You need to just grasp from all the directions, figure out the sources that work for you. For me at that time, there was no Trailhead or not this many videos or things like that. But I found my sources and I stick to them and I mastered them. I did not give up till the time I mastered them. I found the people who were teaching me the right things or who were showing me the right things. Like I remember going to a colleague of mine and asking, bouncing my ideas back with him every single day, because I know he gave me the right feedback and he used to do the same thing. So figure out that kind of a relationship where you have that person, where you someone experienced helping you out and guiding you. And just don't be afraid to learn and grasp this. And again, there's so much out there. Figure out the sources that you can tap into and do not give up till the time you become the best at what you do.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And then the final one is back to the CTA path. So if someone has aspirations, and I know this kind of crosses over to the developer role as well, because a lot of the advice is similar. But like, if you could pinpoint one thing that enabled you to be successful with your CTA, and if you would then recommend that someone else does something similar, what would that be?
Don't limit yourself to the opportunities you get on your project or in your company. Like, just look wider, go wider. Like again, in my preparation, if I lacked a certain experience or a specific topic, in that case, I would not say, oh, I don't have that particular piece or that work in my current project. I used to look wider. I used to go look for other projects and voluntarily offer my help and learn that, or try to speak with someone who has that particular experience and learn from them. So it's just spread your wings and try to seek, understand where you stand. That is the most important thing. Knowing oneself, your weakness, your strengths, your experiences, your inexperiences, and just being persistent. And till the time you do not master or gain the experience, you do not give up, and just go hands on with things. Like I remember learning so many things. Just trialing it out and building things. But again, if I have to summarize this in three statements, it's one would be gain the experience, master your craft. Developer, architect, whatever it is, just master your craft and just be persistent.
And any regrets over those 12-hour days you used to throw 6 or 7 days a week now?
There's no regret about that day. There's a regret now that I'm missing those time. To be honest. Because I used to get a high working those 12, 13, 14 hours a day, like sweeping. And at the end, when you look back, hey, you've done so much. Like a colleague of mine with whom I used to work, he labeled me as a beast mode. And probably he's a beast mode is a nickname of some US footballer or something like that. And yeah, in every spreadsheet or every, he would not use my name. He would say beast mode. And that thing has stayed with me, and that is who I am. I like to do a lot. I'm a workaholic, but yeah. I enjoy the process of creating. Like, I do not look at it as I'm developing, but I look at it in a wider sense that I'm creating something that is going to be used by so many.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, it's a great way to look at it. So if anyone listening or watching wants to reach out and ask any questions, where's the best place?
LinkedIn would be the best place for me. I'm quite responsive. I do try to respond to folks on the same day itself. So yeah, hit me on LinkedIn.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed chatting, and I'm sure our audience will get a lot from that as well. So thank you, and all the best with what's next and what else you can cram into the working day.
Thanks a lot, Ben. We'll be in touch for sure. See you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.